why go with a dead horse.
Shaji?
This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, with the 2010 London Symposium, Proposition, Healing Remedies in the Jungle. Recently, they have brought up many wonderful new ideas on healing, and they're bringing them up every day, and they're bringing them up on the internet, and they're supposed to be wonderful. They save your age, they stop you from aging, and they make you get younger, and they cure cancer, and they cure everything under the sun, no matter what it is you have. Now, recently, they have come up with mushrooms in South America, in Japan, in Thailand, and perhaps other places. Now, these are all different mushrooms. And one set of mushrooms is supposed to help you on aging. It sort of turns your aging around and stops it because it changes all the evidence within you that says you should age to saying that you don't have to age, you know, that those things are in perfect order. That's what it says. Now, how do you handle that? How do you handle it when you have this mushroom that they fix and it completely cures your cancer? How do you handle it when all these other things come along, these mushrooms can do these wonderful things? Now, they had mushrooms before, and they used mushrooms before in naturopathic medicines, and they've been somewhat successful, but nothing so blatant as they have come out with this past couple of weeks. Now, why are they doing that? Why are they coming out? These are things from the jungles. Japan's not a jungle, but these are things from the jungles, and these are things from the outback, things that might not... That's why... Why do you think Australia is the source of so many new medicines? Because it has so much outback. So much undeveloped country that has never been walked over and never been looked at. And it's all sort of new.
Virgin land.
Virgin land. And they're naming these things. They're naming as they're finding them. But they're doing great things. And the Maui people that live there, I've used many of these things and been healed of many things by it, but I don't say that's true, or I don't say it's false, but I say it's doubtful. I say it's doubtful for this reason. I do not believe the Maui people were suffering those illnesses. Now, if Western civilization brought the illnesses to the Maui people, and then they began to experience it, perhaps then they were having it, but I don't believe that they had it before. And so what happened when they started experiencing these things? They wanted to find a remedy for it. So they would go out like their predecessors, like people, the Indian people who are shaman, and they know how to read people and understand what illnesses they have. Well, the Maui people were doing this long before that. The Maui people have done it because they had to, because there's nobody else there to do it. Now, the population of the Western society in Australia has grown, but they have remained in their private conclaves, the Maui people, separate from most of the island. Only the Maui people who want to get in trouble go and join Australians and work for them and so forth. Because what's the first thing they do when they go work for them? They take their diet. Yes. They take their diet. They move away from their Maui heritage. Yes. And in moving away from their Maui heritage, all of the benefits that the Maui heritage had been to them are no longer beneficial to them. All those jungle medicines and all the jungle benefits that they had, what do they do? Swami Rama, in writing his book, The Living with the Himalayan Masters, he tells about how he was with his master, and his master worked with people on different types of healing things and so forth. And he had worked with his master for many years. And then it was time for him to go to the university. And his master said, well, take some of the jewels that are in the back of the cave there, piles of diamonds and stuff that people give him things, and he had no need for them. So he just threw in there. So Swami Rama took a whole bag full of jewels. I mean, my goodness, going to start a new kingdom. And he went to college. And at college, he bought four or five Mercedes to drive in, and he hired five boys to drive them for him, and he hired other houseboys and other boys to cook his meals and wash his clothes and do all his things. And then he went to school, and in school he did quite well. He was very successful. But it came Easter vacation, and so he was able to go home for Easter vacation. So he decided that he would go home. So here he comes back to his master, driving his big Mercedes, chauffeured, wearing all these fancy store dads, when he wore just a loincloth before that, if anything. And so he comes back to his his master, and his master says, great, I have a task for you. And this task was that he had to wear his loincloth, and he had to go to this distant village. And he had to go in the village, that is, go out of the village to a place where the graveyard was. And he had to do graveyard duty, so to speak. He had to sit there, and he had to have his little fire, and he had to cook his coffee or whatever he made there. And so he did that. And then he heard a woman crying. And so he went to find out what the problem was. And the woman was very remorseful. She was a lady of the night. And he felt sorry for her. And so he wanted to help her. And so he went back and told his master about this. And his master said, what are you doing leaving your post, on your meditation post, where you're supposed to be sitting quietly meditating, thinking of nothing but the mantras that you had? Nothing. Why did you do that? You know, you blew it. You've gone so far away from our teaching, so far away from the one-pointedness that we share with you here, that you'll soon have more difficulties. Oh, no, I'm just fine. I'm great. So at this point or another point, the master sent him to see a guru. He said, I want you to go and study with my friend Guru Henry. And so he went over there. Well, couldn't find Henry anyplace. But he went up on the hill, and there was Henry, naked as a jaybird, sitting there. He always was naked. He's naked as a jaybird. And so Rama went up there and tried to get his attention, but Henry was just meditating and not paying attention to anything. And so finally, Rama dropped a couple of rocks to catch his attention. And the guru looked at him and said, oh, are you the one that your master sent to come and study with me for a couple of days? And he said, yes. And how did you know that? You know, you've been sitting here and you have no telephone. And my master has no telephone. How did he communicate this with you? Oh, we talk. And so then he said to Rama, he said, are you ready to start? Rama said, oh, yes, master, yes. Well, come and kiss my toe. And he came, and he tried to kiss his toe, but he couldn't. And this is up on the hill. And so the master gave him a kick, and he rolled down the rocky hillside into the river below. And he went to his master, and he said, that's not the way I think I should be learning. That's not how I should be doing this stuff. And his master said, you haven't learned to be at one within yourself. You haven't learned to be still and be within yourself. And you haven't really learned what you were supposed to learn here in the jungle. You haven't learned. And so Rama subsequently did learn. But this is the difficulty that many of us have in learning from the jungle, because we think they're inferior. We think that they are less than we are. We think that we can tell them a thing or two. We can show them how to set the table. We can show them how to do things because we really know how to do it. Now, all of us, to a degree, have that in our consciousness. We have this superiority in our consciousness. And when we have this superiority, we cannot learn and we cannot grow and we cannot gain the great experience that we have. Now, how do you go past that superiority attitude? How do you get past it? Joseph was telling me he could call me. He could bypass the switchboard. He could bypass everything and call to me direct to here. And it was going to be real cheap. He doesn't know I have to pay anyhow. But it's going to be real cheap. And he's going to do this, and he's going to do this. And I said, Joseph, you're in prison. And I'm a very busy fellow, and I'm happy to work with you. But if you have something that you want to say to me, something you want to talk with me about, something important, great. I am not interested in just chit-chat. I don't have time for that. I don't have time for just chit-chat. Well, he hasn't learned the lesson. But I've cut him down from calling when he wishes to calling once a week. And he said, well, I've only got time to call you on Friday. Okay, call me on Fridays. Why do I have to call you on Friday? Because you told me you only had time to call me on Friday. See, he wanted to put me down. And he was doing everything he could to put me down. I said, Joseph, no, no, no. And he wanted money for stamps because he wanted to write letters to his family and friends and to us. Well, I never heard from him. I bought him a ream of stamps, lots of stamps. Never heard from him once, not even once. And then when we did hear from him with his lesson, he put in three lessons and he put in three letters and he put in all at once, because he wanted to save those stamps. He either was using those stamps to get himself money in prison, or he was writing to all of his relatives, and I'm paying for the stamps to write for all his relatives. And no way. We are working with him to work with the university, nothing else. But, you see, he's cutting himself off. He's cutting himself off from me working with him as Swami Rama, and Rama working with his teacher. When he did those games, he cut himself off from his teacher because he was playing that game. Now, are you cutting yourself off from the jungle? Are you cutting yourself off from the jungle? Because the minute you hear the word mushrooms or you hear the word something from the jungle, you think how utterly, utterly stupid, how terrible and how nutty that is. It's beneath us. It's beneath us. And nothing is beneath us. When OK went to, where did you go?
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia. He went into Saudi Arabia, and there he worked with these other doctors, and they were good doctors. But then he had to work with the people. And he works as an
gynecologist.
And he's working with women who are going to have babies. And he has to work with them. He's got to see their vagina. He's got to see their organs. He's got to see their body and so forth. Well, they kept covered up. And he told them, I can't help you if that you're going to keep covered up because I have to work with you. I have to see how you're progressing and how things are and let you work. Well, you can do it with my husband present or somebody else present. He said, well, that's up to you. And after a while, they gained such a confidence and trust in him that they let him without having another male present, which is beautiful. But the point is, he had to stand firm. He had to not think that it's a joke. He had I'm a gynecologist, and I got to work with you. I have babies, and I cannot work with you having babies. You know, I cannot do my doctor's job. And if he had in any way given up on his oath of what his job entailed, how he learned it, at least, you know, if he had given up, he would have been a very poor gynecologist, wouldn't he? He would have been of no benefit at all. See, that's what too many of us do. We say, well, if you don't want me the way I am, then I won't do it. You just say, this is the way I am, and this is the way I do it. And if you want to come, come. If you don't want to come, that's you. I will come. I will be there. I will offer my services. If you don't want to take them, that's your decision, and that's your choice, and that's your freedom. But I have to do it my way. And this is what many people do, too. They read these things and they say, oh, garbage, garbage. And a lot of it is garbage. But you have to be very selective. Do you think you could be a shaman? Do you think you could be a psychic? And that you could look at the various things that are coming out on the market that are supposed to do such wonderful things, the miracle drugs and stuff, and know a fraud instantly, and know a real one instantly? Could you look at them? Don't judge. Just say, I know that I know that I know. I know which one is real and which one's not real. Which one of these jungle medicines that are coming out and untried, untrue, you know, untested, not true, but untried, untested, in any way, can I know which is going to work? Here I am in the jungle with somebody who's got that disease, and there's nothing, and there's no boat to get us out of here, and if I don't act, that person may die. Can I believe myself? Can I believe what I do? This Russian medical doctor, psychiatrist, she was working at UCLA, and she was studying women and men who were psychic, who could read the illness in a patient from a distance. And so she put these, Shafia Karagula was her name, Dr. Shafia Karagula. She put these women in a doctor's office with his permission and had them sit there and write notes on each person that came in. They didn't know their name, they didn't know anything about them, they didn't know. And so they had to describe the lady or man. And then they had a meeting with the doctor after lunch. And they all sat down and they wrote out. Now, he too was rather psychic. So he wrote down, but he also did he checked them out. He observed them. And so then he wrote down what he felt was the problem. And then he compared it with what they said. And most of the time, they were more right than he was. And sometimes where he thought he was right, he was wrong. Because he combined it with his medical treatment, his intuitive treatment. And these women were very accurate, very accurate. I was at the Menninger Foundation, and we were doing research there. Three hundred went to Europe. There were 30 of us there who were researchers and doctors and people who went into the medicine, surgeons and heads of the psychiatric school of Sweden, Sweden, and the big Copenhagen, from the Copenhagen University. And, we at the Menninger Foundation with the, it's a psychiatric institute, we all sat in a big circle. And then one person agreed to get in the circle, because he had an unseen illness. He had an unseen hurt. You couldn't see it in his body. And so he sat down, a big blonde-haired guy. He was a medical doctor, and he was a skier and a bunch of other things, you know. And so he sat there, and each one of us looked at him. And we said, well, your hurt is someplace around here or here. And then some people actually named places, you know. Well, what had happened is from the middle of his back, he'd been skiing, and he wrenched his back quite badly. And he still was suffering from the pain of it. He had had it treated and so forth, but he was still suffering from the pain of the wrenched back as it was healing. And everyone was able to pick up on it. But they each thought it was something different. Each thought it was an organ that was hurting or something, and only one or two of them picked it up that it was his back that was hurting him. And they were right. Now, here with these hard-nosed doctors, these hard-nosed clinicians, these hard-nosed people who were doing research, and as I was, and we were able to do those things. We looked at auras. They held a black sheet behind the person, and then you had to study them and see their aura and then tell it, write it down, and everybody confirmed it in the same way. And then they did our auras too, and that sort of stuff. So it's kind of fascinating. But the research, this is into altered states of consciousness, and that's what the whole thing was all about. And we did the research on that, we did the studies on that, and we learned about that because it was such a fascinating thing. We felt that it was something that we would like to know. But these guys that came out of the jungles of India, and they were teaching us how to do this. And as they came out to show us how to do this, they had very simple ways of doing it. Then we had people from South America, like Arrigo, the surgeon with a rusty knife, you know, who would cut things, wounds out of things, and make them well. Really amazing. He sort of became nothing, probably because he was fooling around too much. He allowed himself to get too much publicity. And so what happened to him, do you think? You don't know, and you could think, but his humility was missing. And because he lost his humility, he lost his contact with his contact on the other side, who is showing him what to do. Now, whether there's another side and whether there's contacts or not, if you believe it, it's all for you. And it was for him. And it was just really quite fascinating and quite beautiful.
Yeah, we saw that on television.
Yes.
In Palin, when we went to the Philippines.
Yes.
The people doing operations with the hand.
Yeah.
And you see the blood. You do something on the abdomen.
Yeah, on the outside.
And he asked him, he said, how do you do it? He said, first of all, you can't see. Mm-hmm. You know, you do pattern.
Yeah.
You can't see.
Yeah.
Because I have a third eye.
Yeah.
I can see. And I know what I'm doing. But you are judging me. And I say, oh, how do I cut without knife? And he said, where is the blood from? He said, you can't understand it. Because I have a third eye. And I can see I can do the operations. And it was, and they were having people lining up. And they were operating on them. Just like that. There was no logic.
That's right. That's right. No, they're amazing. And these things go on all over the world. And you each are doing these things. To a limited degree, you each are doing these things far more than you know, because you do it intuitively, and that's what you believe. That's what I believe. I believe this is it. I believe that's intuition. And you say, oh no, that's just my intellectual knowledge, my intellectual awareness. There's nothing intellectual about it. If you had intellectual in there, you would mess you up. You wouldn't be able to do it. But you see, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. You have, all of you, that beautiful intuitive talent and ability. And the wisdom that comes to us out of the jungles, the wisdom that comes to us out of all of the possible places that it can come, is nothing but just the surface, just the utter surface of it. And it is fantastic. And I have stories of experiences that I have had, and the trips that I took to Russia studying these things with the Menninger group, and it's really amazing, really amazing. But it's fun, and it's enlightening, and it is some not scary, but you wish, it's either wish that's terrible, you would like to do it more consistently, beneficial to people. But you don't believe me. You don't believe me. You don't believe me because you treat me just like anybody else. And as long as you treat me like anybody else, you don't believe me. Now, I don't mean that you should treat me better. I just mean that when I tell you something, if I am your sharer, if I am your teacher, if I am whatever you might want to call me, and you don't act upon it instantly, you don't believe me. And there's nothing much I can do for you. You know? Because that's really all it is. I'm not asking you to believe in me or to do these things. I'm merely asking you to believe in yourself, and then you'll find that all the things that I'm telling you are true. All the things that I'm saying are true, even if some of them are not. You say, how can you say that? That's easy. That's easy. Because many times what we find as true is later found to be false. What we're finding today in our medical profession, our scientific community, the research done by the early sages, the early scientists of back in the days of St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, all of these wonderful people, the things that they said are true. The things that they taught us are true. But we believed them because we wanted to believe them because they were important people. But we didn't believe them because we believed them. And the sooner you start believing yourself, then you'll begin believing others. And you won't say, well, Herb is just an egotist. He wants me to believe in him. He wants me to follow him. No, I don't. You start following me, and I'll lose you. And you won't be able to find me. But if we walk together, revealing these things, uncovering these marvelous paths and these marvelous stories that we have before us, wow, how great that is. Yeah. So we have healing remedies in the jungle. We've had them everywhere. But answer me quickly if you can. Where is the greatest healing remedy?
Within.
Within.
Within. Exactly. In me.
I have proved that myself.
It's true. It's true. Because that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Have a lovely evening, and we'll see you tomorrow, whatever time you can be, and we'll have our program continue. So know that I love you. I love you. I love you.